Okay, if you could get on out of the courtroom, we'd appreciate it. We have another case, and it's called Juliet Carol Gilbert, new matter of Juliet Carol Gilbert. The appellant, if you could introduce your appearance, please. Mr. Espinoza.
Your Honor, Adam Espinoza, on behalf.
Thank you, and Ms. Cohen, if you could introduce your appearance, please.
Sure. Nancy Cohen, on behalf of the respondent, Juliet Gilbert.
All right. This third court, please. Mr. Espinoza and Ms. Cohen, this case is set for 30 minutes only, so that means that each of you has 15. And Mr. Espinoza, you will have to keep track of your time, so if you wish to reserve any of that.
Thank you.
Please go ahead.
May it please the court. This is a case about whether a lawyer who enters into a flat fee agreement with a client who agrees to provide exclusive, specific legal services in return for that flat fee violates Colorado Rule of Professional Conduct 1.16D when she retains the funds on an hourly basis after termination but prior to completing the three specific legal tasks. This is a case about public protection, important guidance to the bar, and access to justice. It's about putting clients on notice of their financial obligations to the lawyer. It's about protecting clients against overreaching attorneys. And it's about providing lawyers the important guidance on how to handle funds after they're terminated when they are entered into a flat fee agreement. This court knows that flat fee agreements and fixed fee agreements provides access to justice. It provides someone who may not otherwise be able to afford an attorney the opportunity to have their counsel of choice and to know the specific fee that they're going to pay for that legal representation. It also allows a lawyer to collect a fixed fee, a fee for future legal services, and then this court has recognized that this is advantageous to both parties.
Mr. Espinoza? I don't mean to interrupt you, but your time is really short on this. Let me take you straight to a point. Am I right that the whole argument here, or what's really at issue, is when we talk about a fee that's earned, whether that includes something that the attorney could collect in a quantum merit theory, that is, that it would be unjust to allow the other party to the client to keep that money. Is that basically the argument? What does earned mean here?
What does earned mean is the argument, but to determine what earned means, the court needs to look at Rule 1.16D, needs to look at 1.15B, which talks about the fact that a lawyer must communicate the basis or rate of their fee in writing to a new client. So when you look at what is earned in this specific circumstance, you look at the fee agreement that was entered between the parties on May 25th, 2011.
And so even though as a matter of equity, as a quantum merit matter, that the attorney could go in and establish that he had done enough work, that he's entitled to more money, that wouldn't constitute being earned for purposes of these rules. That's what you're arguing?
But it may be that it's earned, but it's not. The lawyer is not able to retain the funds. In the matter of Sather, the court addressed this issue and specifically stated that even though a lawyer may have a right to quantum merit, they need to refund the unearned fees to the client.
And that's precisely it, the unearned fees. The question is, are those fees earned or unearned?
In this case,
And you're arguing from that key sentence in Sather that we meant there, because we said even though you're entitled to quantum merit, that quantum merit recovery would not be an earned fee. Is that what you're saying?
It would not be an earned fee pursuant to that that statement.
And Rule 1.16D says, when it says ways to protect the client's interest, and gives some examples, one of them is return unearned.
Yes.
So that's the issue. Do you have to return fees? Do you have to return part of the retainer at that stage, at the stage of termination of the relationship, on the basis that they're unearned, even though you have a claim in quantum merit that you are entitled to those.
Yes, if the court looks at Sather and looks at the evolving language of 1.5, which changes from a written fee agreement going from preferably in writing to in writing, and then later to in writing if there's any changes, it's clear the court has evolved the language to mean that if it's not in the fee agreement, then it's not earned. And so in this specific circumstance, Ms. Gilbert agreed to do three specific tasks, and she didn't complete even one of those tasks. And so at termination, she should have been required to give it back.
And could I ask as a follow-up on that? So if I returned, I mean, that would seem to say return, that the attorney, even though the attorney has a claim, intends to pursue a claim for quantum merit, that nevertheless the attorney has to give that money that's left, the rest of the retainer, back, rather than hold it in escrow, do anything else with it. Is that right?
Under the language of the plain language of Sather, yes. However, under Rule 115C, that rule specifically addresses when there's a conflict as to the funds and the fact that a lawyer can then retain those in their trust account until the dispute regarding the funds is decided. In this case, the court knows that the attorney did not retain any of the funds in the trust account and never put the funds in the trust account. So that wasn't an option here. But under a plain reading of Sather, yes, the lawyer would have to return the money and then pursue some kind of action or relief in the district court or the county court, or maybe with the Bar Association fee arbitration or whatever avenue they seem to choose.
And given what you just said at the beginning of your response to my question, in terms of asking for guidance, which this case seems to be largely about, would you be suggesting then that, notwithstanding the language in Sather about returning the unearned money, that nevertheless it would be ethical for the attorney to keep it in a trust account pending resolution of the quantum merit claim?
Under the plain language of Sather, it's our position that the attorney would have to return the money. I think there is some, there could be an argument that 115C may allow an attorney to keep those funds in their trust account. Again, that's not what happened here. We would argue that under Sather, the plain language, it says that even though the attorney may be entitled to quantum merit recovery, they have to return the unearned fees.
Despite us saying that in Sather, do you think it's meaningful at all that the way the rule is phrased in 1.16D, it actually doesn't say you have to do that. It says you have to protect the client's interests. And then it says, by doing things such as, and it gives a series of examples, one of which is returning the unearned fees.
Which is important. Protecting the client's interest by returning the unearned fees is important, so then the client then can pursue their legal matter with a different lawyer, or they can pursue their matter in a different way. Requiring the client to file a request for investigation with the Office of Attorney Regulation, or requiring the client to file a civil matter against the attorney really only serves to protect the attorney and not the client.
Let me turn that around just for one last question here, and I appreciate you staying with me. As a practical matter, when you're dealing with relatively small amounts of money, you know, some of the other cases we had Dudding and I don't know, we had one last year too, involve big amounts of money where there's a lawsuit, there's filing an attorney's lien, various things. But we're talking about a retainer of some few thousand dollars. As a practical matter, does this solution mean then that basically the attorney's probably just going to be out and have no quantum merit recovery, because it would absolutely make no sense to try to mount a lawsuit for, you know, $1,500 or whatever it is?
Well, I don't know. I guess that's speculative. If the court is asking whether or not the amount of money that is involved in this agreement should be a factor for the court to consider, I would urge the court to not consider that fact.
Mr. Eskimos, can I just put a little twist on that?
Yes.
It's not so much the amount of money, but the burden upon collection, if you will. And I understand that your position is that the money needs to be returned, and then the burden needs to be put on the attorney to go after the money from the client, former client.
Yes, if they choose to.
And if some might argue that it should be the other way around, the money may be retained and the former client should come after the money. there's a different sort of burden, a different protection. It depends on really who you're trying to protect, the lawyer or the former client. Isn't that right?
It is, and the attorney regulation process is set up to protect the public and to educate lawyers. It's not necessarily set up for the protection of lawyers, but by having a decision in this case that is in line with SATA, in line with 1.5B, the court will be educating lawyers whom often enter into flat fee agreements, who don't complete the work and are unsure how to handle the funds.
Am I correct that there's nothing in SATA or in the rule that specifically says which process is supposed to be followed, return the money and then sue or keep the money? I understand that this particular case is made more difficult by virtue of the fact that the money isn't in the trust.
It is made more difficult, and the cases don't say specifically which venue an attorney should seek this recourse.
Right.
It's our position that the presiding disciplinary judge and hearing board is not the appropriate place to seek this recourse for a few reasons. They're really not set up for this kind of litigation, but more importantly, the clients have no rights in those particular proceedings. What I mean by that is that the client is not afforded the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses, to present experts, to make an argument on behalf of their case for the funds that they think they're entitled to be returned. A proper venue for that would be in a district court or a civil court or a county court, where a client could then present their case and advocate their case.
Counselor, you tethered your argument to the requirements of the agreement and Rule 1.5, and then just to be clear, you haven't actually alleged a violation of that particular rule here, correct?
No, we're not alleging a violation, and we didn't allege a violation of 1.5B in the underlying disciplinary proceedings. Ms. Gilbert did comply with 1.5B. She just did not comply with the agreement that she drafted pursuant to 1.5B. The agreement was for three specific tasks for a specific amount, and she did not comply with that agreement that she reached.
And so in your view then, given the way the fee agreement was drafted here, no fees were earned at all until A, B, and C were actually accomplished.
That's correct, Your
Honor. So it's sort of 0000 and then 100%.
That's correct, and you have to understand, and Your Honor, I would just point out that the respondent is a licensed attorney of 16 years at this point, 10 years at this University of Colorado as a law professor who drafted this, who executed it and provided it to her clients and agreed to these terms. Now, could it have been drafted better? Certainly. And should it have had benchmarks or maybe an hourly rate in it? Certainly. But it didn't, and the client shouldn't be punished because of those failures on behalf of the attorney.
And I guess the other question that I have is, the hearing board seems to take a different view of this. In other words, the hearing board, as best I can read the decision, indicates that it found that she did earn at least some portion of these fees. And I don't believe that you've actually squarely contested those findings. So what does that leave us, at least with respect to whether the 1.16 violation occurred here in this case?
Well, we're not
putting aside sort of a broader question about guidance in future cases.
In this case, the hearing board relied on commercial principles of contract law and focused its arguments on quantum merit, that theory of recovery, when really this is a case about what is the attorney's professional obligation upon termination. And so it's our position that because she did not fulfill the obligations under the contract, then those fees were not earned. Did this attorney provide a service? Did this attorney earn some money? Probably. But that the monies that the court attributed to Ms. Gilbert as earning should have been collected in the subsequent proceeding, not in this proceeding. And so it's our position that by not returning the money and then seeking relief under a quantum merit theory in a different court, she violated 1.160 for not refunding the money at termination and keeping it for two more years.
And I guess what I struggle with, though, is 1.16, which is the disciplinary violation here, talks about return of unearned fees.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to square that with even your view that under a quantum merit theory, some portion of those fees have been earned. You're saying we should read 1.16 to say even where those fees have been earned, if it's a quantum merit approach, you still have an obligation to return all of them, earned or not, and then separately pursue a quantum merit recovery. Is it?
if I accurately assume your position, how you'd like us to see 1.16?
Under this, in this fact scenario, under these terms of the fee agreement, she has not earned any money pursuant to her fee agreement. In doing the quantum merit analysis, the hearing board had determined that she may have earned some fees, but under the analysis of the simple analysis of 1.16D and 1.5B, and looking at the fee agreement, Ms. Gilbert had not completed the task and therefore had not earned the money. And so we're asking the court to require lawyers to return the funds and then pursue an action in a different court. Your Honor, I only have 45 more seconds. I'd like to reserve this time if I can.
Ms. Cohen?
Yes. May it please the court, Chief Justice and Justices and Counsel. This is a fairly straightforward case. I agree with that. The question is, did Ms. Gilbert violate Rule 116D when she retained a certain portion of the retainer that she had received? And that's the only decision that the people are appealing. That's it. So the question is the interpretation of Rule 116D. And should 116D include that if you have a flat fee and you haven't performed all the services, that you haven't earned it? Well, that's not what 116D says. What 116D says now that you shall, is practically reasonable, return the unearned fees. So what this case is not about, it's not about the sanction, because they're not appealing it. And it's not about the factual findings, because the people agree with the hearing board's factual findings. So that means that the people agree that Ms. Gilbert provided a service that had value and benefited the client. Those are the factual findings there. It's not whether the amount that was retained, the $1,114, whether they were reasonable, because there wasn't any allegation of an unreasonable fee. And it's not about other conduct that Ms. Gilbert might have engaged in, whether or not she put it in the trust account. She's already admitted that she violated Rule 115A and C. And it's not about other rules that were not charged. And even though the people have said we're not charging it under Rule 1.B, they keep referring to Rule 1.B. They spent about 5 pages of their brief on Rule 1.5B.
Can I ask you a question then?
Sure.
I'll do fair, I'll interrupt both of you. So if the reason this is earned is because the attorney is entitled to it under a quantum merit theory, would it follow, and given what you're telling us about the importance of the factual findings, that the attorney has only behaved ethically and complied with the rule if in a subsequent proceeding in which the attorney's decision is challenged, the attorney actually establishes that she was entitled to this under quantum merit?
Well, not exactly. I mean, when Ms. Gilbert returned the $1,800 of the unearned fee, she did that, and she retained a certain amount. She was acting ethically at that point in time. She had a fee agreement that said, I'm going to perform certain services. And in fact, she did. She didn't perform them all. That's true. So at that point, the question is, she's telling the client, this is what I did for you. This is what I'm entitled to. And it is, I think, under quantum merit at that point in time.
Well, wait, if it's part of the fee agreement, why is it quantum merit? I mean, it seems to me you got two arguments here. I understand you're sort of saying, well, she showed her the hourly fee rate.
Right.
But if the agreement was that I'll get all the money if I do these three things, but if our relationship terminates earlier, I'll get an hourly rate, then where does quantum merit come into that at all?
Well, I think the first part is, it's true she didn't put her hourly rate in the fee agreement. She showed something, and it wasn't part of the fee agreement, but she showed a separate document, Exhibit 4, that indicated what her hourly rate is. So the question ends up being, I think the first question is, did she earn it under Rule 116? Under her contract, I would argue she did earn it. She performed services.
Under her contract, she earned.
Well, she performed services. She did completely completed one task out of the three and partially completed a second task. So she did earn, not all of it, but she earned a portion of it. So that's the first question. The issue is she didn't have, she didn't put in her fee agreement the $250 an hour. So if you don't accept that she earned it because she performed certain services, even if she didn't complete all of them, then it is a preliminary situation where it's not going under the fee agreement. It is going under a preliminary basis. And so if you look at the preliminary basis, then the question really is what people are saying is, if your fee agreement isn't clear, you're not entitled to a dime, and you're not entitled to quantum merit, you must return the fees, and therefore, you must file a lawsuit, even if you have earned the money, even if you may be entitled to it, and chase down the client. Now, if that's what the court wants, I can tell you, fee agreements won't be around. Because whether it's for these small amounts, the lawyer realistically isn't going to do that. So the question ends up being is,
well, aren't you overstating just a pinch there? I mean, all a lawyer has to do is say, put the numbers in the contract, in the fee agreement. And then that takes it out of this.
That's true.
So, and that's pretty easily done. You have a flat fee agreement and you say, and if XYZ happens, I'm going to bill you at this hourly rate. What makes this case so problematic is that we have a bad fee agreement with a resort to quantum merit, and then really the issue tends to be, whose burden is it to go after this money in quantum merit? How do we go after this? But does the attorney have to return it and then go after it, or give it back and then have, you know, the opposite? I mean, that's the problem here, isn't it?
Well, that may be a problem, although that isn't what she was charged with. She wasn't charged with a bad fee agreement. She wasn't charged with violating 1.5B.
Well, if the fee agreement didn't explain what earned meant, then it wasn't clear at the very least.
And the question is, under Rule 116D, when that doesn't say what earned means, should somebody be disciplined at this point in time to say that earned means something that is not in the rule, is not in the comment, and wasn't charged with under 1.5B? That's really what this case is about and what it should be. Now, if the court believes that there should be something else in the fee agreement, the court revised its rule in 2011 and could have added that in. The court just revised 115 in 2014, could have added something in. But if the court believes that, the court has a standing rules committee. And then the court should send that issue down to the Standing Rules Committee and let the Standing Rules Committee hash out all the possible issues and what can happen and bring back something to the court and let the court decide. But at this point in time, it shouldn't be done saying, did she violate a rule in which, even though they're not arguing the sanction, you know, she violated then another rule that they're going to put on her record, and if something comes up in the future, will be an issue. Should that be, in this case, under these circumstances?
The language of Sather has been around for quite a while, and it really does seem to me maybe we should change it or back away from it, but it does seem pretty clear, doesn't it, that in one sentence there we said, you have to return the unearned fees, even though you're entitled to, even though you have a quantum merit claim.
Yes, on page 409 in the opinion, that's exactly what it says. But I don't think it's an either or. And the way the people are interpreting that, and you may say to me, Ms. Cohen, you're totally wrong. I don't think it's an either or. I think it's an and. I think it is both that you have to return unearned fees and that you're entitled to quantum merit. So look at the facts in Sather. Nobody argued that he was entitled to the $6,900 plus that he kept. What he got dinged for, so to speak, in the violation of Rule 1.16D is because it took him 3 months to return part of the money and then 5 months to return the other part of the money. So even though he had set a non-refundable fee, which was a separate issue, and the courts addressed that particular issue, and he admitted that it was refundable, no one argued about the money he kept. So it's not an either or, it's an and. You both have a responsibility to look at and say, are there fees that I didn't earn? And she did that.
She wrote a letter back, she did an accounting, she said, I didn't earn a little over $1,800, and here's your money. But I did earn this, and to me, that is very consistent with what Sather said. And then when you look at the Malott case, which was decided in 2012, decided after Rule 1.5B had been amended twice, and admittedly, the facts are totally different because it's a fight between two lawyers, but when you look at paragraph 20 and what Justice Hobbs said in that case, he talks about the fact that you can be entitled to quantum merit if you meet the factors. And the hearing board found that she met the factors here. She performed services at her expense. They were a benefit for her client, and it would be unjustified for the client to retain them.
Back to my question then, is her behavior and not returning this dependent upon the board ultimately finding that she was entitled to that money under quantum merit? And if that's true, what kind of a rule is that?
Well, it shouldn't be dependent. I mean, but we're here under a disciplinary case, and the argument that was made was she didn't earn it. She should just be able to keep those fees. I mean, under your case law, she should be able to keep the unearned fees. And really,
what form then should there be provided to the client to decide whether those are actually earned or not?
Well, she did provide an account.
But other than in the disciplinary proceeding?
Well, then at that point, the question is, there's a fee dispute. And how should the fee dispute be doing? Should it be used through the disciplinary process? And should a lawyer be disciplined and potentially be suspended or have the lawyer's license taken? Or should the civil arena be used at that point? Dunning came up in the civil arena, Malott came up in the civil arena, Sather didn't, but really the big issue in Sather was also the sanction. That's not an issue here. That was a big issue there, whether he should be disciplined more for what he did, not an issue here. So the question ends up being is, if the lawyer has earned it and is entitled to it.
If the lawyer feels she has earned it, then she, so it's almost a subjective test, if you will.
Well, she does feel that she earns it, but I think as Sather said, you can't just say, for example, this isn't an amount, and it means that you're entitled, you can't front load, for example, your flat fee and say that. So even if she feels that she earned it, if in fact the fee was unreasonable, there still is, you can come back under Rule 1.5A and say no. But the question ends up being is, and this is part of it, should the disciplinary process be used in terms of when their fees are earned? And in this case, the fees were earned, and she did return the unearned fees, and she timely returned the unearned fees. I don't think that's an issue in the case as well.
Ms. So, Cohen, isn't the real issue who determines who, when it's earned? I mean, I don't know that the client is going to want to intervene in the disciplinary proceeding. I mean, I think it's who determines that it's earned. As the chief said, she may feel that she's earned it, but if it doesn't say it's earned in the agreement, what gives the attorney the right to say, then I earned it, sue me? If they draft a bad agreement, why wouldn't the onus be on the attorney then to go back after?
Well, the question ends up being, I think at that point, if you have an agreement that may not be clear, then the question is, should this court say that a different rule should be changed to address that issue? But in this case, when they know that she did some services, and they agree that she was entitled to some fee, they just didn't agree to the amount of the fee. So the question is, should then the client be the one who says, well, I don't agree, so I'm either going to file a complaint and I'll let attorney regulation counsel deal with it, or I'm going to file a lawsuit. And at that point in time, under, you know, the question ends up being is, should it be the client or should it be the lawyer, I guess.
Right.
And there are lots of situations where the client does not agree that the lawyer earns it. And the lawyer says, okay, I think I earned it. Here's why.
Well, I think your position is best put that at this particular point, this dichotomy that we're identifying isn't very clear in the rules, and that your client shouldn't be disciplined as a result of that lack of clarity.
Well, that is my position.
So, assuming that we agree with you on that, what should the rule be?
What should the rule be?
Mm-hmm.
I think the rule should be, I don't think Rule 1.16D should change. I don't. I think it should be, you have to promptly return unearned fees. And then the question ends up going back to, what should Rule 1.5B say? And I submit that should go to the Standing Rules Committee and let the Standing Rules Committee address all these different issues in the way that it's done, whether or not it should be the client who should have the burden, whether it should be the lawyer. What happens if the lawyer puts in, okay, it's going to be $250 an hour. What if the client did the work on the first but didn't do it on the second, but they didn't say, well, I'm entitled to everything up to the second? There's so many different permutations. I would just say you should go to the Standing Rules Committee.
Thank you. Mr. Espinosa, you have a few seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Chief Justice Rice, you pointed out what needs to happen here, and the simple thing needs to happen. The lawyer just needs to state the basis of rate of fee in the fee agreement. That's all. If it's going to be collected at an hourly rate, state that. If it's going to be collected by benchmarks for going to the preliminary hearing or the motion hearing or trial, state that. State the basis of rate of your fee. In this case,
I'm just testing this. So if the fee agreement doesn't state it, then ipso facto, there can be no retained earned fees.
There can't be in this professional responsibility ethics matter. If there's a quantum merit theory of recovery, that can be handled in the civil court.
I see.
That's all I have, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Espinosa. Ms. Cohen, we appreciated your arguments. The court will be in recess until later this week.